Chapter 6. The Hunt Begins.
Perrin did not expect to sleep, but a stomach stuffed with cold stew, his resolve about the roots had lasted until the smells of supper's leftovers hit his nose, and bone weariness pulled him down on his bed. If he dreamed, he did not remember. He awoke to land shaking his shoulders, dawn through the open door, turning the water to a shadow haloed with light.
"Rand is gone," was all Land said before he left at a run, but it was more than enough.
Perrin dragged himself up, yawning, and dressed quickly in the early chill. Outside, only a handful of Shinarans were in sight, using their horses to drag Trolloc bodies into the woods, and most of those moved as if they should be in a sickbed. A body took time to build back the strength that being healed took. Perrin's stomach muttered at him, and his nose tested the breeze in the hope that someone had already started cooking. He was ready to eat those turnip-like roots raw, if need be. There were only the lingering stench of slain Myrdral, the smells of dead Trollocs, and men, alive and dead, of horses and the trees, and dead wolves. Moraine's hut, high on the other side of the bull, seemed a center of activity. Min hurried inside, and moments later Massima came out, then Uno. At a trot, the one-eyed man vanished into the trees toward the sheer rock wall beyond the hut, while the other Shinaran limped down the slope. Perrin started toward the hut. As he splashed across the shallow stream, he met Massima. The Shinaran's face was haggard, the scar on his cheek prominent, and his eyes even more sunken than usual. In the middle of the stream, he raised his head suddenly and caught Perrin's coat sleeve.
"You're from his village," Massima said hoarsely. "You must know. Why did the Lord Dragon abandon us? What sin did we commit?"
"Sin? What are you talking about? Wherever Rand went, it was nothing you did or didn't do."
Massima did not appear satisfied. He kept his grip on Perrin's sleeve, peering into his face as if there were answers there. Icy water began to seep into Perrin's left boot.
"Massima," he said carefully, "whatever the Lord Dragon did, it was according to his plan. The Lord Dragon would not abandon us."
"Or would he? If I were in his place, would I?"
Massima nodded slowly.
"Yes. Yes, I see that now. He has gone out alone to spread the word of his coming. We must spread the word too. Yes."
He limped on across the stream, muttering to himself. Squelching at every other step, Perrin climbed to Moraine's hut and knocked. There was no answer. He hesitated a moment, then went in. The outer room where Lan slept was as stark and simple as Perrin's own hut, with a rough bed built against one wall, a few pegs for hanging possessions, and a single shelf. Not much light entered through the open door, and the only other illumination came from crude lamps on the shelf, slivers of oily fatwood wedged into cracks and pieces of rock. They gave off thin streamers of smoke that made a layer of haze under the roof. Perrin's nose wrinkled at the smell. The low roof was only a little higher than his head. Loyal's head actually brushed it, even seated as he was on one end of Lan's bed, with his knees drawn up to make himself small. The Ogier's tufted ears twitched uneasily. Min sat cross-legged on the dirt floor, beside the door that led to Moraine's room, while the Aes Sedai paced back and forth in thought. Dark thoughts, they must have been. 3 paces each way was all she had, but she made vigorous use of the space, the calm on her face belied by the quickness of her step.
"I think Massima is going crazy," Perrin said.
Min sniffed.
"With him, how can you tell?"
Moraine rounded on him, a tightness to her mouth. Her voice was soft, too soft.
"Is Massima the most important thing in your mind this morning, Perrin Ibarra?"
"No. I'd like to know when Rand left and why. Did anyone see him go? Does anyone know where he went?"
He made himself meet her look with one just as level and firm. It was not easy. He loomed over her, but she was Aes Sedai.
"Is this of your making, Moraine? Did you rein him in until he was so impatient he'd go anywhere, do anything, just to stop sitting still?"
Loyal's ears went stiff, and he motioned a surreptitious warning with one thick-fingered hand. Moraine studied Perrin with her head tilted to one side, and it was all he could do not to drop his eyes.
"This is none of my doing," she said. "He left sometime during the night. When and how and why, I yet hope to learn."
Loyal's shoulders heaved in a quiet sigh of relief. Quiet for an Ogier, it sounded like steam rushing out from quenching red-hot iron.
"Never anger an Aes Sedai," he said in
a whisper obviously meant just for himself, but audible to everyone.
"Better to embrace the sun than to anger an Aes Sedai."
Min reached up enough to hand Perrin a folded piece of paper.
"Loyal went to see him after we got him to bed last night, and Rand asked to borrow pen and paper and ink."
The Ogier's ears jerked, and he frowned worriedly until his long eyebrows hung down on his cheeks.
"I did not know what he was planning. I didn't."
"We know that," Min said. "No one is accusing you of anything, Loyal."
Moraine frowned at the paper, but she did not try to stop Perrin from reading. It was in Rand's hand.
"What I do because there is no other way. He is hunting me again, and this time one of us has to die, I think. There is no need for those around me to die also. Too many have died for me already. I do not want to die either, and will not if I can manage it. There are lies in dreams, and death. But dreams hold truth, too."
That was all, with no signature. There was no need for Perrin to wonder who Rand meant by he. For Rand, for all of them, there could be only one, Baalzamon.
"He left that tucked under the door there," Min said in a tight voice. "He took some old clothes the Shinarans had hanging out to dry, and his flute and a horse. Nothing else but a little food, as far as we can tell. None of the guards saw him go, and last night they would have seen a mouse creeping."
"And would it have done any good if they had?" Moraine said calmly. "Would any of them have stopped the Lord Dragon, or even challenged him? Some of them, Massima for one, would slit their own throats if the Lord Dragon told them to."
It was Perrin's turn to study her.
"Did you expect anything else? They swore to follow him. Like Moraine, he'd never have named himself Dragon if not for you. What did you expect of them?"
She did not speak, and he went on more quietly.
"Do you believe, Moraine, that he's really the Dragon Reborn? Or do you just think he's someone you can use before the One Power kills him or drives him mad?"
"Go easy, Perrin," Loyal said. "Not so angry."
"I'll go easy when she answers me. Well, Moraine?" "He is what he is," she said sharply. "You said the pattern would force him to the right path eventually. Is that what this is? Or is he just trying to get away from you?"
For a moment, he thought he had gone too far. Her dark eyes sparkled with anger, but he refused to back down.
"Well?"
Moraine took a deep breath.
"This may well be what the pattern has chosen, yet I did not mean for him to go off alone. For all his power, he is as defenseless as a babe in many ways, and as ignorant of the world. He channels, but he has no control over whether or not the One Power comes when he reaches for it, and almost as little over what he does with it if it does come. The power itself will kill him before he has a chance to go mad if he does not learn that control. There is so much he must learn yet. He wants to run before he has learned to walk."
"You split hairs and lay false trails, Moraine," Perrin snorted. "If he is what you say he is, did it never occur to you that he might know what he has to do better than you?"
"He is what he is," she repeated firmly. "But I must keep him alive if he is to do anything. He will fulfill no prophecies dead, and even if he manages to avoid Dark Friends and Shadow Spawn, there are 1,000 other hands ready to slay him. All it will take is a hint of the 100th part of what he is. Yet if that were all he might face, I would not worry half so much as I do. There are the Forsaken to be accounted for."
Perrin gave a start. From the corner, Loyal moaned.
"The Dark One and all the Forsaken are bound in Sheol Ghul," Perrin began by rote,
but she gave him no time to finish.
"The seals are weakening, Perrin. Some are broken, though the world does not know that. Must not know that.
The Father of Lies is not free, yet. But as the seals weaken more and more, which of the Forsaken may be loosed already? Lanfear, Samael, Asmodian, or Belal, or Avhin? Is Shamael himself the betrayer of hope? There were 13 altogether, Perrin, and bound in the ceiling, not in the prison that holds the Dark One. 13 of the most powerful Aes Sedai of the Age of Legends. The weakest of them stronger than the 10 strongest Aes Sedai living today. The most ignorant with all the knowledge of the Age of Legends. And every man and woman of them gave up the light and dedicated their souls to the shadow. What if they are free and out there waiting for him? I will not let them have him.
Perrin shivered, partly from the icy iron in her last words and partly from the thought of the Forsaken. He did not want to think of even one of the Forsaken loose in the world. His mother had frightened him with those names when he was little.
Ishamael comes for boys who do not tell their mothers the truth. Lanfear waits in the night for boys who do not go to bed when they are supposed to.
Being older did not help, not when he knew now they were all real. Not when Moraine said they might be free.
"Bound in Shael Ghul," he whispered, and wished he still believed it.
Troubled, he studied Rand's letter again.
Dreams. He was talking about dreams yesterday, too.
Moraine stepped closer and peered up into his face.
Dreams?
Lan and Uno came in, but she waved them to silence. The small room was more than crowded now, with 5 people in it besides the Ogier.
"What dreams have you had the last few days, Perrin?"
She ignored his protest that there was nothing wrong with his dreams.
"Tell me," she insisted. "What dream have you had that was not ordinary? Tell me."
Her gaze seized him like smithy tongs, willing him to speak. He looked at the others. They were all watching him fixedly, even Min. Then hesitantly told of the one dream that seemed unusual to him, the dream that came every night, the dream of the sword he could not touch. He did not mention the wolf that had appeared in the last.
"Kalandor," Lan breathed when he was done.
Rockhard face or no, he looked stunned.
"Yes," Moraine said. "But we must be absolutely certain. Speak to the others."
As Lan hurried out, she turned to Uno.
"And what of your dreams? Did you dream of a sword, too?"
The Shinaran shifted his feet. The red eye painted on his patch stared straight at Moraine, but his real eye blinked and wavered.
"I dream about about swords all the time, Moraine Sedai," he said stiffly. "I suppose I've dreamed about a sword the last few nights. I don't remember my dreams the way Lord Perrin here does."
Moraine said,
"Loyal?"
"My dreams are always the same, Moraine Sedai. The groves and the great trees and the steading. We Ogier always dream of the steading when we are away from them."
The Aes Sedai turned back to Perrin.
"It was just a dream," he said. "Nothing but a dream." "I doubt it," she said. "You describe the hall called the Heart of the Stone, in the fortress called the Stone of Tyr, as if you had stood in it. And the shining sword is Kalandor, the sword that is not a sword, the sword that cannot be touched."
Loyal sat up straight, bumping his head on the roof. He did not seem to notice.
"The prophecies of the dragon say the Stone of Tyr will never fall till Kalandor is wielded by the dragon's hand. The fall of the Stone of Tyr will be one of the greatest signs of the dragon's rebirth. If Rand holds Kalandor, the whole world must acknowledge him as the dragon."
"Perhaps."
The word floated from the Aes Sedai's lips like a shard of ice on still water.
"Perhaps," Perrin said. "Perhaps. I thought that was the final sign, the last thing to fulfill your prophecies."
"Neither the first nor the last," Moraine said. "Kalandor will be but one fulfillment of the Kariathon cycle, as his birth on the slopes of Dragonmount was the first. He has yet to break the nations or shatter the world. Even scholars who have studied the prophecies for their entire lives do not know how to interpret them all. What does it mean that he shall slay his people with the sword of peace, and destroy them with the leaf? What does it mean that he shall bind the 9 moons to serve him? Yet these are given equal weight with Kalendor in the cycle. There are others. What wounds of madness and cutting of hope has he healed? What chains has he broken? And who put into chains? And some are so obscure that he may already have fulfilled them, although I am not aware of it. But no, Kalendor is far from the end of it.
Perrin shrugged uneasily. He knew only bits and pieces of the prophecies. He had liked hearing them even less since Rand had let Moraine put that banner in his hands. No, it had been before that, even. Since a journey by Portal Stone had convinced him, his life was bound to Rand's. Moraine was continuing.
If you think he has simply to put out his hand, loyal son of Arendt, son of Holland, you are a fool, as is he if he thinks it. Even if he lives to reach Tyr, he may never attain the stone. Tyrans have no love for the One Power, unless for any man claiming to be the dragon. Channeling is outlawed, and Aes Sedai are tolerated at best, so long as they do not channel. Telling the prophecies of the dragon, or even possessing a copy of them, is enough to put you in prison in Tyr. And no one enters the Stone of Tyr without permission of the High Lords. None but the High Lords themselves enter the heart of the stone. He is not ready for this. Not ready.
Perrin grunted softly. The stone would never fall till the dragon reborn held Kalendor.
How in the light is he supposed to reach it, inside a bloody fortress, before the fortress falls? It is madness. Why are we just sitting here? Min burst out. If Rand is going to Tyr, why aren't we following him? He could be killed, or... Why are we sitting here?
Moraine put a hand on Min's head.
Because I must be sure, she said gently. It is not comfortable being chosen by the wheel to be great or to be near greatness. The chosen of the wheel can only take what comes.
I am tired of taking what comes.
Min scrubbed a hand across her eyes. Perrin thought he saw tears.
Rand could be dying while we wait.
Moraine smoothed Min's hair. There was a look almost of pity on the Aes Sedai's face. Perrin sat down on the end of Lan's bed opposite Loyal. The smell of people was thick in the room. People and worry and fear. Loyal smelled of books and trees as well as worry. It felt like a trap with the walls around them and all so close. The burning slivers stank.
How can my dream tell where Rand is going? He asked. It was my dream.
Those who can channel the One Power, Moraine said quietly, those who are particularly strong in spirit can sometimes force their dreams on others.
She did not stop her soothing of men, especially on those who are susceptible.
I do not believe Rand did it on purpose, but the dreams of those touching the true source can be powerful. For one as strong as he, they could possibly seize an entire village, or perhaps even a city. He knows little of what he does, and even less of how to control it.
Then why didn't you have it too? He demanded. Or Lan?
Uno stared straight ahead, looking as if he would rather be anywhere else, and Loyal's ears wilted. Perrin was too tired and too hungry to care whether he showed proper respect for an Aes Sedai. And too hungry as well, he realized.
Why?
Moraine answered calmly.
Aes Sedai learn to shield their dreams. I do it without thinking when I sleep. Warders are given something much the same in the bonding. The Gaidin could not do what they must if the shadow could steal into their dreams. We are all vulnerable when we sleep, and the shadow is strong in the night.
There's always something new from you, Perrin growled. Can't you tell us what to expect once in a while, instead of explaining after it happens?
Una looked as though he was trying to think of a reason to leave. Moraine gave Perrin a flat look.
You want me to share a lifetime of knowledge with you in a single afternoon? Or even a single year? I will tell you this. Be wary of dreams, Perrin Ebarra. Be very wary of dreams.
He pulled his eyes away from hers.
I am, he murmured. I am.
After that, silence, and no one seemed to want to break it. Min sat staring at her crossed ankles, but apparently taking some comfort from Moraine's presence. Uno stood against the wall, not looking at anyone. Loyal forgot himself enough to pull a book from his coat pocket and try to read in the dim light. The wait was long and far from easy for Perrin.
"It's not the shadow in my dreams I'm afraid of. It's wolves. I will not let them in. I won't."
Lan returned, and Moraine straightened eagerly. The warder answered the question in her eyes.
"Half of them remember dreaming of swords the last four nights running. Some remember a place with great columns, and five say the sword was crystal or glass. Massima says he saw Rand holding it last night."
"That one would," Moraine said.
She rubbed her hands together briskly. She seemed suddenly full of energy.
"Now I am certain, though I still wish I knew how he left here unseen. If he has rediscovered some talent from the Age of Legends..."
Land looked at Uno, and the one-eyed man shrugged in dismay.
"I bloody forgot, with all this flaming talk about blood."
He cleared his throat, shooting a glance at Moraine. She looked back expectantly, and he went on.
I followed the Lord Dragon's tracks. There's another way into that closed valley now. The earthquake brought down the far wall. It's a hard climb, but you can get a horse up it. I found more tracks at the top, and there's an easy way from there around the mountain."
He let out a long breath when he was done.
"Good," Moraine said. "At least he has not rediscovered how to fly, or make himself invisible, or something else out of legend. We must follow him without delay. Uno, I will give you enough gold to take you and the others as far as Jahanna, and the name of someone there who will see that you get more. The Gil Aldanin are wary of strangers, but if you keep to yourselves, they should not trouble you. Wait there until I send word."
"But we will go with you," he protested. "We have all sworn to follow the Dragon Reborn. I do not see how the few of us can take a fortress that has never fallen. But with the Lord Dragon's aid, we will do what must be done."
"So we are the people of the dragon now," Perrin laughed mirthlessly.
"The Stone of Tyr will never fall till the people of the dragon come. Have you given us a new name, Moraine?"
"Watch your tongue, blacksmith," Lan growled, all ice and stone.
Moraine gave them both sharp looks, and they fell silent.
"Forgive me, Uno," she said, "but we must travel quickly if we are to have a hope of overtaking him. You are the only Shinaran fit enough for a hard ride, and we cannot afford the days the others will need to regain full strength. I will send for you when I can."
Uno grimaced, but he bowed in acquiescence. At her dismissal, he squared his shoulders and left to tell the others.
"Well, I am going anyway, whatever you say," Min put in firmly.
"You are going to Tar Valon," Moraine told her.
"I am no such thing!"
The Aes Sedai went on smoothly as if the other woman had not spoken.
"The Ammerlin Seat must be told what has happened, and I cannot count on finding one I can trust who has messenger pigeons, or that the Ammerlin will see any message I send by pigeon. It is a long journey and hard. I would not send you alone if there were anyone to send with you, but I will see you have money and letters to those who might help you on your way. You must ride quickly, though. When your horse tires, buy another, or steal one if you must, but ride quickly."
"Let Uno take your message. He's fit, you said so. I'm going after Rand."
"Uno has his duties, Min. And do you think a man could simply walk up to the gates of the White Tower and demand an audience with the Ammerlin Seat? Even a king would be made to wait days if he arrived unannounced. And I fear any of the Shinarans would be left kicking their heels for weeks, if not forever. Not to mention that something so unusual would be known to everyone in Tar Valon before the first sunset. Few women seek audiences with the Ammerlin herself, but it does happen, and it should occasion no great comment. No one must learn even as much as that the Ammerlin has received a message from me. Her life and ours could depend on it. You are the one who must go."
Min sat there opening and closing her mouth, obviously searching for another argument, but Moraine had already gone on.
"Lan, I very much fear we will find more evidence of his passing than I would like, but I will rely on your tracking."
The warder nodded.
"Perrin, Loyal, will you come with me after Rand?
From her place against the wall, Min gave an indignant squawk, but the Aes Sedai ignored it.
"I will come," Loyal said quickly. "Rand is my friend, and I will admit it. I would not miss anything. For my book, you see."
Perrin was slower to answer. Rand was his friend, whatever he had become in the forging. And there was that near certainty of their futures being linked, though he would have avoided that part of it if he could. "It has to be done, doesn't it?" he said finally. "I will come."
"Good."
Moraine rubbed her hands together again with the air of someone settling to work. "You must all ready yourselves at once. Rand has hours on us. I mean to be well along his trail before midday." Slender as she was, the force of her presence herded all of them but Lan toward the door, Loyal walking stooped over until he was through the doorway. Perrin thought of a good wife herding geese. Once outside, Min hung back for a moment to address Lan with a too sweet smile.
"And is there any message you want carried? To Nynaeve, perhaps?"
The warder blinked as if caught off guard, like a horse on three legs.
"Does everyone know?"
He regained his balance almost immediately.
"If there is anything else she needs to hear from me, I will tell her myself."
He closed the door nearly in her face.
"Men," Min muttered at the door. "Too blind to see what a stone could see, and too stubborn to be trusted to think for themselves."
Perrin inhaled deeply. Faint smells of death still hung in the valley air, but it was better than the closeness inside. Some better.
"Clean air," Loyal sighed. "The smoke was beginning to bother me a little."
They started down the slope together. Beside the stream below, the Shinarans, who could stand, were gathered around Uno. From his gestures, the one-eyed man was making up for lost time with his cursing.
"How did you two become privileged?" Min demanded abruptly. "She asked you."
"She didn't do me the courtesy of asking." Loyal shook his head.
"I think she asked because she knew what we would answer, Min. Moraine seems able to read Perrin and me. She knows what we'll do. But you are a closed book to her."
Min appeared only a little mollified. She looked up at them, Perrin head and shoulders taller on one side, and Loyal towering even higher on the other.
"Much good it does me. I'm still going where she wants as easily as you two little lambs."
"You were doing well for a while, Perrin, standing up to her like she'd sold you a coat and the seams were popping open."
"I did stand up to her, didn't I?" Perrin said wonderingly.
He had not really realized he had done that. "It was not so bad as I'd have thought it would be."
"You were lucky," Loyal rumbled. "To anger an Aes Sedai is to put your head in a hornet's nest."
"Loyal," Min said, "I need to speak to Perrin. Alone. Would you mind?"
"Oh, of course not."
He lengthened his stride to its normal span and quickly moved ahead of them, pulling his pipe and tobacco pouch from a coat pocket. Perrin eyed her warily. She was biting her lip as if considering what to say.
"Do you ever see things about him?"
he asked, nodding after the Ogier.
She shook her head. "I think it only works with humans. But I've seen things around you that you ought to know about."
"I've told you—"
"Don't be more thick-headed than you have to be, Perrin. Back there, right after you said you'd go? They were not there before. They must have to do with this journey, or at least with you deciding to go."
After a moment, he said reluctantly, "What did you see?"
"An Aielman in a cage," she said promptly. "A Duathwan with a sword. A falcon and a hawk perching on your shoulders. Both female, I think. And all the rest, of course. What is always there. Darkness swirling round you and—"
"None of that," he said quickly.
When he was sure she had stopped, he scratched his head thinking. None of it made any sense to him.
"Do you have any idea what it all means? The new things, I mean." "No, but they're important. The things I see always are. Turning points in people's lives or what's fated. It's always important."
She hesitated for a moment, glancing at him.
"One more thing," she said slowly. "If you meet a woman, the most beautiful woman you've ever seen, run."
Perrin blinked.
You saw a beautiful woman? Why should I run from a beautiful woman? Can't you just take advice? She said irritably. She kicked at a stone and watched it roll down the slope. Perrin did not like jumping to conclusions. It was one of the reasons some people thought him slow-witted. But he totaled up a number of things Min had said in the last few days and came to a startling conclusion. He stopped dead, hunting for words.
Min, you know I like you. I like you, but, you sort of remind me of my sisters. I mean, you...
The flow stumbled to a halt as she raised her head to look at him, eyebrows arched. She wore a small smile.
Why, Perrin, you must know that I love you.
She stood there, watching his mouth work, then spoke slowly and carefully.
Like a brother, you great wooden-headed lummox. The arrogance of men never ceases to amaze me. You all think everything has to do with you, and every woman has to desire you.
Perrin felt his face growing hot.
I didn't.
He cleared his throat.
What did you see about a woman?
Just take my advice, she said, and started down toward the stream again, walking fast.
If you forget all the rest, she called over her shoulder, heed that.
He frowned after her. For once his thoughts seemed to arrange themselves quickly, then caught up in two strides.
It's Rand, isn't it?
She made a sound in her throat and gave him a sidelong look. She did not slow down, though.
Maybe you weren't so boneheaded after all, she muttered.
After a moment, she added, as if to herself,
I'm bound to him as surely as a stave is bound to a barrel. But I can't see if he'll ever love me in return. And I'm not the only one.
Does Egwene know? He asked. Rand and Egwene had been all but promised since childhood. Everything but kneeling in front of the women's circle of the village to speak the betrothal. He was not sure how far they had drifted from that, if at all.
She knows, Min said curtly. Much good it does either of us.
What about Rand? Does he know?
Oh, of course, she said bitterly. I told him, didn't I? Rand, I did a viewing of you, and it seems I have to fall in love with you. I have to share you, too, and I don't much like that, but there it is. You're a wooden-headed wonder after all, Perrin Barra.
She dashed a hand across her eyes angrily.
If I could be with him, I know I could help. Somehow. Light, if he dies, I don't know if I can stand it.
Perrin shrugged uncomfortably.
Listen, Min, I'll do what I can to help him, however much that is. I promise you that. It really is best for you to go to Tarvalen. You'll be safe there.
Safe? She tasted the word as if wondering what it meant.
You think Tarvalen is safe?
If there's no safety in Tarvalen, there's no safety anywhere. She sniffed loudly, and in silence they went to join those preparations to leave.